Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard, does a fantastic job as a sports columnist there. He joins me now. How are you, Meek?
Hey, John, I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing well. How do the Ducks look?
You know, it's hard to say. I was talking with Ryan Thorburn, our beat writer. We were reminiscing about our days. He used to cover Colorado. I used to cover Kansas football. We were reminiscing about how you watch a team in camp, and a team could just be god-awful, and you could convince yourself that that they were actually good because you're watching them scrimmage against themselves. So I always temper a little bit what I'm seeing in fall camp. But I have to say, you know, just the early indications, it's like Mario Cristobal's got a pretty good team on his hands. They've got some holes to fill, but the number of guys they have coming back at key spots makes you think it ought to be a pretty good Oregon football team.
I keep thinking they're going to win a game when I look at the schedule that nobody expects them to win, just because they'll be better on defense and Justin Herbert is going to be dangerous. If there's a game like that out there for them, who are the candidates for them to steal one?
Well, you know, when I look at their schedule, there's not a bunch of games that I would make them a prohibitive underdog in. I think, obviously, they're an underdog against Washington. That's probably the game that you would circle and say they're a significant underdog in that one. That'd be a big upset, but they got the Huskies at home. You know, if Oregon's going to contend for the division, that's probably a game that they're looking at. Like, this is our chance to say that we're in the mix for this thing. So I'd certainly give them a chance to beat Washington at home, depending on where both teams are at when that game rolls around. You know, they got to go to Utah. I think that'll be a really tough game. But they've had some success against Utah last couple years. So those are the two that jump out to me as games where they probably will not be favored in, but I'd give them a shot to win either one of them.
I look at Cristobal and the message he gives on Media Day and his enthusiasm and the guys he has around him. I see differences between Helfrich era, Taggart era, Cristobal era, but I'm curious where you see the biggest difference in those three eras and as you compare Mario Cristobal to the other two coaches.
Yeah, it's been a pretty significant swing of the pendulum going from Mark Helfrich then to Willie Taggart, then to Mario Cristobal. You know, Mark Helfrich was so understated, and then Willie Taggart was so much the opposite. There was so much flash with Willie Taggart, and the question was, did he have the substance to back it up? And it kind of feels like Mario Cristobal is a nice balance of those two. You know, he certainly exudes a little more charisma in public than Mark Helfrich did, has a little more of a commanding presence, but also is not quite as flashy as Willie Taggart does. He also, you know, comes across as having maybe a little more substance than Willie Taggart did. So he's kind of in the middle of those two. But I will say that of the three coaches, I feel like Mario Cristobal probably has the best grasp on just, you know, the public side of being a football coach. You know, he seems to understand that being a football coach is more than just what you do on Saturdays on the sideline. There's a whole lot more to it. You got to deal with the media, got to deal with the fans, got to deal with the boosters, got to recruit. And so far in those areas, you know, we've only seen him coach one game, but in the stuff you do in the off season, you got to give him pretty high marks.
Does the Las Vegas Bowl concern you at all? Or do you throw that out and give him a mulligan?
You know, until we see Oregon on the field again with Mario Cristobal on the sideline and have something to sort of wash out that memory, I think it's going to be in the back of your mind. I think they'll probably purge it pretty quick with the non-conference schedule they have. They're going to be 3-0, and they ought to win all three games in blowout. So I got a feeling that by the time they play Stanford, that Vegas Bowl is going to be a pretty distant memory. I do give him a mulligan on that just because of all that was going on. They were in the middle of trying to pull together the recruiting class for the early signing day, and there was so much upheaval with the coaching staff. I don't put a lot of stock into it, but still there were some things in that game that are concerning enough that until you see something different, you do have to keep it in the back of your mind.
Justin Herbert this season, he's bigger. He's 240 pounds. He's got the hair. NFL scouts are loving him. There's all this hype around him. He seems to be handling it well. What are the keys for Herbert's success this season?
Well, one key is he's got to have some guys step up in the receiving core, whether that's Tabari Hines, the transfer from Wake Forest, who's been a little bit banged up in camp, whether that's Brendan Schooler, who's had a nice camp, I think, and seems to have some good chemistry. Dylan Mitchell's the leading receiver coming back, who maybe is a candidate to have a breakout year. So Justin Herbert's going to have to get some help. He's going to have to stay healthy. You know, he still has not started a full season as the starting quarterback at Oregon, so that's something he still, you know, a box he still has to check. But I don't have a whole lot of concerns about Justin Herbert himself. I guess one more I throw in there, he's got a new coordinator, Marcus Arroyo. You know, we don't know for sure what Marcus Arroyo is going to be as a coordinator. So the things that I would, question marks I would have, none of them really have to do with Justin Herbert. All of them are basically about the guys around him.
Yeah, Arroyo in particular is interesting to me. Do you have a sense with Cristobal, Arroyo, even Willie Taggart last season seemed to struggle in the second half of games? I'm interested to see what Arroyo does calling a game over a full season.
Yeah, I am too. You know, and talking about that Vegas Bowl, that was kind of an inauspicious debut for Marcus Arroyo, for sure, as the play caller, because Oregon didn't have anything going offensively in that game at all. Now, the final score is a little bit misleading because I don't think they scored an offensive touchdown until the fourth quarter. So that gives you a little bit of pause. I know that Justin Herbert liked Marcus Arroyo, that they had a good relationship last year. And I think in terms of continuity, it was good for Justin Herbert to have the guy who was his quarterback coach now be able to be his offensive coordinator. I do think there are some unknowns there. Because like you mentioned, Oregon got out-coached in the second half of a lot of games last year. And you can say, well, they didn't have Herbert in those games. And it's a valid point, but I didn't think that coaching staff as a whole did a great job of getting the most out of what they had with that offense. Arroyo and Cristobal were part of that. They weren't calling the plays. That was Willie Taggart. So I guess we'll find out, you know, how much of that was with Taggart, how much of it was the guys that are still here.
Austin Meek, columnist Eugene Register Guard, is with us. The Jim Leavitt thing on defense is always going to be interesting. I think he's such a personality. He's not making that much less than the head coach. It was important that Oregon retained him. I get all that. Can they take another leap on defense, or is that asking too much of Leavitt?
No, I think they can. You know, there was a lot of buzz about how much they improved defensively last year, and it was warranted. You know, compared to what they were the year before, they made a big jump. But still, when you look at the numbers, they were still a middle of the pack defense last year. They gave up a lot of points, and I think a lot of it got sort of masked over by the struggles they had offensively when Herbert was hurt. But defensively, in those games against Washington and Stanford, they didn't play well enough to win those games. Maybe even if they had Herbert, so. I do think that there's another step that they can take defensively. And I think they have the pieces coming back that they ought to make. You know, when you look at their defense, they've got 9 or 10 guys who have significant starting experience coming back. So there's not a lot of places where they're just completely new on defense. And with Troy Dye in the middle, that's a nice guy to have coming back. So I think they ought to be pretty good defensively, and I do think they ought to take another step forward.
Austin Meek with us, columnist Eugene Register Guard. All right, those three Non-conference games, uninspiring, might be the worst non-conference schedule in America. Which of those three games, if you could only attend one, does Austin need to go to? Do you go to that opener just to say, all right, what do they look like for the first time? Or is there one game where you think you're going to get a better look at who they're really going to be?
You know, it probably is the opener. But I don't know that you learn anything about the team in any of those games. You know, it's a weird year. And I know that if Oregon had its preference, they would not be in this situation. They would like to have at least one game in that non-conference schedule where you're tested by somebody. But I just don't see it with this. I don't see it with this schedule. You know, it could end up being an advantage for them. It could be a situation where with a new head coach, having three games that basically are tune-up games is exactly what you need. I think we'll find out in that Stanford game if that non-conference schedule served them well or not, because I think there's two things that could happen. They could come out of the three non-conference games flying really high, and they could run into Stanford and just get smacked down. Or they could come out of those three non-conference games with a lot of confidence, and that could carry over into the Pac-12 schedule. Be curious to see which way that goes.
Yeah, that's so important, isn't it? I mean, on one hand, you worry about if you play three really tough opponents, you get beat up and maybe you lose games. On the other hand, if you don't play enough, do you really get a test? And, you know, we've seen it done both ways. We've seen a Washington team a few years ago that played a soft schedule and pretty much ran the table and ended up in the playoff. And then we also seen people, you know, downgraded because of it. I don't mind it because it's not their fault. Like, I kind of give them a pass on, you know, A&M backing out of that game, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, if they had Texas A&M on that schedule this year, it would look a lot different. You know, if you're a team that thinks that you got a chance to be in the playoff, you definitely would like to have another marquee opponent in there, because I think, you know, history has shown that if you play a good non-conference schedule, the selection committee will give you a mulligan if you drop one somewhere. Whereas if you don't play a good non-conference schedule, you pretty much got no margin for error. You know, you're not going to get any benefit of the doubt from the committee if it's a close call. I don't know that Oregon is going to be in that position. You know, I don't think people are looking at Oregon necessarily as a team, you know, that could be in the playoff mix. And what about the non-conference scheduling? For Oregon, I think it's just about take care of business in those first three games, stay healthy, and hope that sets you up to have a good run in the Pac-12.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard, I'll see you in the press box, my friend.
All right, man. Looking forward to it. Thanks.
All right, take care. There he is. Leave it right here. Coming up, Punch It Audio Plus. What were they thinking? Great show so far. Great guests. Brad Klein of the Golf Channel, Ben Bolch of the LA Times, Zach Lassiter, Oregon State's deputy AD, Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard. That's a lineup. I now want to talk about everything else. All the best sound from all around.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Austin Meek of the Eugene Register Guard was talking about the two things that could happen in Oregon's non-conference schedule. Thought it was really interesting as the columnist at the Register Guard looked at Oregon's non-conference schedule, which, again, Bowling Green, Portland State, and Nevada?
Because I think there's two things that could happen. They could come out of the three non-conference games flying really high, and they could run into Stanford and just get smacked down. Or they could come out of those three non-conference games with a lot of confidence, and that could carry over into the Pac-12 schedule.
I meant San Jose State. San Jose State, Bowling Green, Portland State. Look, it's a soft schedule. They get them all at home. None of them are Power 5 conference opposition. But the three teams combined for only four wins last season. You got to win all of those. And you got to spin it as a positive. Like Meek, you know, he talked about, hey, there's on the one hand, and then on the other hand. I think the one hand also has to include, hey, you're healthy. You know, you have a chance to be really healthy and not beat up and get some guys rested. And maybe your starting quarterback, Justin Herbert, doesn't play 12 quarters before the Stanford game. NFL preseason, Baker Mayfield on the field, looking like he might just be a credible Cleveland Browns quarterback. Punch it.
They have a third down and five. Mayfield back. Look, throws. Callaway caught it. 45-40, and he may be gone. 20, 50, 10, 5, touchdown, Antonio Callaway. How about that? Callaway, 54 yards. That's why they got him, right?
Yep.
That's why they got him. And Baker Mayfield looked like, hey, look, it was something he could manage. That's what I liked about it. It was a Cleveland team that looked like, not just with Baker Mayfield, but, you know, they also have Taylor at quarterback. These are two good guys. With Mayfield and Taylor, you're okay at that position. Here's Baker Mayfield.
It's exciting to hear, but that does not mean I'm satisfied. I always say that, you know, I set my own expectations, set my own standard, and I have to live up to that. I'm not done working.
Seahawks aren't done working either. Here's Pete Carroll talking about the first team offense, last night's preseason game.
I was really happy with the fact the offense went down the field. I thought they looked strong and right and on point. Russell moving well, got a couple runs, nice throws and catches and all that. So everything worked out fine there.
How about the defense?
Defense, a couple tackles getting started, but we had to go through this first game and figure out, you know, the game speed and take a big step forward in the running and hitting part of this game. And so that has taken place.
Look, I kind of feel like the Seahawks, which everybody's expecting, like, hey, they might win seven. I think they're like a 9-win team. But the NFL, it will come down to this. Is Russell Wilson running for his life all season, or is he going to be able to make plays? Because if it's him running for his life, it'll be difficult. If it's him doing this, it won't.
Wilson. Penny picks up the block. Wilson throws it to the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks. Nick Finette. The tight end gets the 5-yard score, and Seattle is on the board.
Russell Wilson making plays. Also in the NFL, Andy Dalton. Nobody's talking about Cincinnati. How'd they look, Andy?
That's what we wanted to do. We wanted it to be efficient. We wanted to kind of spread the ball around, get a lot of different guys involved, and we did that. We marched the ball right down the field twice and ended with touchdowns. So that's what we wanted to do.
Preseason victory. A lot of people saying he's regressing, though, as a quarterback, and this is it for him. He's got to go out and save his job. Pick six. He didn't mention that, did he? Preseason, man. We all need a preseason. Marvin Lewis gets a win over the Bears. Hey, Marvin, talk about it.
Positives, you know, other than the turnover, we went great on the route, and that happened. So again, it's another learning lesson. So with that, and I think the other thing is just, we had a couple of special teams penalties with young guys, and they make an impact in the game. So good things to coach from, and pleased with the opportunity to get guys playing in there and them having good tape now.
Marvin Lewis trying to save himself. Andy Dalton trying to save himself. Two guys that aren't seeing eye to eye. Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton. Prior to the Panthers-Bills preseason game, former teammates got weird. Here's Kelvin Benjamin talking about the confrontation with Cam Newton. Punch it.
Yeah, I was just moving on from it, I guess.
What did he say to you?
I mean, that's serious.
What did he say to you?
Moving on from it.
It looked like you tried to walk away from it a few times.
Huh?
looked like you tried to block away from him a few times.
Yeah, just moving on from him.
Just moving on in the pregame. It was an awkward thing. Like, Cam Newton came over, and Cam Newton played the tough guy. Rob Gronkowski says he's having a blast. Patriots tight end. Punch it.
I would say coming out to practice really never gets that boring. Once we're on the field, once we're going, it's always fast-paced. It's always high energy. Out here, we're always going drill to drill. And the coaches always have many different drills for us. No matter what it is, so there's always something to work on.
Why does he always sound like he's just got tackled and he's getting up? A little groggy, Gronk. I think it's just the way he talks. Maybe. Sean Payton, Saints coach, 24-20 win over Jacksonville. Punch it.
Early in the game, offensively and defensively, we struggled. I mean, honestly, I don't know when we forced the first punt. And then offensively, we didn't generate much of anything. You know, we had one score, but look, there'll be a lot we have to get cleaned up.
They got to clean it up. 24-20 Saints over the Jaguars. By the way, he was down 20-14 until the fourth quarter. His fourth stringers are better than the other guys' fourth stringers. Both sides look slow. Bill Belichick says the Patriots are in Super Bowl form. No, he didn't.
Thought we gave a good competitive effort in the second half. Thought there were a lot of guys, try to play hard. Certainly there are a lot of mistakes in the game, a lot of things we need to work on. But it's good to see. Good to see us make some plays there in the second half. And played a lot of people. Obviously, we've got a lot of work to do. We'll evaluate how things went tonight and just move on to next week. Always good to get started. We've got a long way to go. So we've taken a couple steps, but we got a lot of work to do. And, just keep grinding it out through camp.
Keep grinding, Bill. Keep grinding. 49ers in action. Kyle Shanahan says he wanted to get his guys off the field in San Francisco. Punch it.
I mean, not really. I mean, you only have a certain amount of guys, and you know, you don't want anyone to have to play that whole game. So, it's tough when guys, anytime a guy goes out, the next guy's got to play more. And we're not trying to have anyone play the whole game, but there are four quarters in the game. And God, I hope we never go to overtime in the preseason either. Got nervous there for a little bit, but that's just part of the game. So, until we have, there's four of them, we got to get through them somehow.
Should never have an overtime game in a preseason game. Should never. That should not even be a thing. Let them tie. Who cares? Vegas? Yeah, probably Vegas. So make a half point on every game. You know? Nothing should be even on a Vegas board. That settles it. Kyle Shanahan, interesting, as the offensive coordinator in San Francisco, has got a quarterback that everybody loves there, Jimmy Garoppolo. A team that everybody expects to have resurgence. But I'm just not sure that they're going to take that big step forward. It's kind of like Jim Leavitt's defense at Oregon. It's like such an improvement down the stretch last year for San Francisco. Can they be that? I mean, are they going to come out of the gates and be 8-0? I mean, is that what everybody's expecting? I just don't see that. Jalen Hurts, Alabama starting or not starting quarterback, has gone public, made some comments. Nick Saban, the Alabama coach, says, hey, it's not going to affect us one bit.
This is probably a lot more important to people outside this organization than it is to people inside. I don't think this has any effect on our team. I've talked to a lot of the team leaders. You know, the players are focused on what they need to do. The rhetoric will not have anything to do with who's the quarterback. That will obviously be decided on the field by how people execute, how they do their job.
Interesting to see how this plays out. Hurts was 26-2 as a starting quarterback. But in the offseason, he's been very critical of the coaching staff's handling of who's going to be the starter. Nick Saban says this is more important to people outside the organization than people inside? I don't think so. The rhetoric won't have anything to do with who's the quarterback, but I can tell you that if Jalen Hurts doesn't feel that this is handled right, and if Tua Tagovailoa is going to be the guy who plays, not just the guy who comes in during mop-up duty or to come in to save a game that, like he did in the championship game, That this is not done. And the fact that a guy that was inside the locker room is now publicly coming out and talking about it, isn't that an outside the locker room thing? I think it will be a factor. It's the elephant in the room. Hurts said that nobody came up to him in the whole spring. Nobody asked him how he felt. Nobody asked him what was on his mind. Nobody asked him how he felt about how things were going. Nobody asked him about his future. And he said, so now they're trying to handle the situation. He says, the narrative has been created. One of those guys is going to transfer. I think it's going to be Hurts. Hey, he's going to have to. Alabama number one in the preseason coaches poll opens September 1st against Louisville. By the way, Alabama has to replace four starters in the defensive secondary, has a new offensive coordinator, has a new defensive coordinator, and has not decided a starting quarterback, and nobody's worried. I wouldn't be either. Leave it right here. You got the bald face.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.